This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/east. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management. That's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to east.hover.com. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 223. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And Roger is at the Twit Cottage, and I'm not this week. Turnabout.
Yes, and it's not fair play.
I guess it's not unfair play.
It's true. I don't think it's any kind of play at all.
But you just got back from Seattle. You spent the whole week up there.
Yes, I had a great time. It was fun. I did all the touristy things. I was trying to find the Fraser office, and I know I do understand that it is a fictitious one, but they do have t-shirts with Fraser with the Seattle skyline in the line art. So it's nice. I did the monorail. I did the Space Needle. I did Pike's Market. I did the Music Experience building.
Oh, you went to the thing. You went to the thing that Paul Allen spent all his money on instead of Tech TV?
Yes. No, he also spent it on the Portland Trailblazers, didn't he?
Well, true. But yeah, the Hendrix Experience, I remember, launched while we were working at Tech TV, and we had to cover it for Tech Live.
So I saw that. It was kind of interesting. A bunch of Mac Minis kind of literally zip-tied to the bottom of the tables while you click through the exhibits. It was very very cutting edge.
Very.
But what I liked the most was, you know, in many respects, I was telling Patrick this, who's sitting right across from me, that reminds me of San Francisco back like it was in the 80s when it was a little when it was a lot cleaner and a lot less congested.
Hey, Patrick, I mean, Norton.
There's a sizable, you know, population of people, but it doesn't feel crowded even on a busy day.
I wasn't certain whether Patrick was there or not. Hey, Patrick Norton.
You were just looking at me over the camera, I swear. Whoop. John once again reminds me to put my face close to the microphone.
Hey, now I hear you. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging around for East Meets West.
This is one of those podcast thingies, huh?
You've been on it before.
Actually, I don't think I've ever been on East Meets West.
You have. You and Roger were on it together once.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Were we?
I don't think so.
I think he was standing behind me.
Maybe I'm confusing it with Buzz Out Loud.
Yes. But I was never on Buzz Out Loud.
Roger, you were on Buzz Out Loud. You and Patrick both.
Well, no.
I was on Buzz Out Loud.
He was on Buzz Out Loud.
Roger,
maybe another
is on
Asian guy with glasses.
Maybe I'm confusing it with East Meets West.
How many podcasts are you producing a week now?
25.
Only 9.
Do they all bleed together into a miasma of joy and happiness and information deep inside your skull?
Like a bunny smiling.
Like a little bunny rabbit sniffing but a tiny flower.
I was supposed to go to Dragon Con with Tom, but instead I went to PAX since Dragon Con dropped my hotel.
Yeah, so what happened with that? It wasn't Dragon Con dropped your hotel. It was a credit card information change or something?
Patrick will get a kick out of this. So every year you get a renewed credit card or when its due date is up. So my credit card company dutifully sent me a updated credit card with the exact same number on it but with a different security digit on the back. And that was the same credit card I used to book the hotel room last year. Now, for some reason, someone stole it. But when they stole the renewal card, they just, you know, they cut a slit on top of the envelope, but they closed it by stapling it shut and sticking it back in the mail, as I would not notice or something. So I noticed there were a couple of fishy charges with a Skype. There were like two $10 charges, and it's like, well, someone stole my credit card, canceled it, got a new one. But I guess when they did that, they canceled my room that was booked for Dragon Con. So I said, nuts to this. My friend's up in Seattle. She's going to PAX. I'll go to PAX. And I've never been to Seattle, so I'll stay there a week. And I had to take some vacation because the CEO of Revision 3 told me I needed to take vacation.
Use it or lose it.
Well, you said, yeah, you essentially reached your max is what I heard.
No, no. I'm actually beyond the max. And so
they are.
There you go.
Max.
So I'm beyond what is allowed for vacation accrual. So I have to start burning it down. By going to Seattle.
You know you're a liability to the company on their bottom line when you have a high vacation balance.
Matter of fact, your vacation balance was so high, apparently it was noticed by the board.
Yes. So they can either give me more, they can either pay me out.
Take the vacation. You look so much happier.
I am.
Leave.
It was fun.
Leave the
you
cannoli.
Know what? I've totally underestimated the power of not being connected. Because without like reliable internet connection, I was forced to do other things besides sit on the computer.
Taking a couple weeks off every year where you don't do email and you're not attached to your cell phone is really refreshing.
It is.
Do you feel strange, Pat? Roger, do you feel odd?
I feel strange.
No, I know you do. Right? That was my mistake.
I feel a little disoriented because I was so enjoying my time. Now that I'm going to go back to work, it's kind of jarring. Because now I'm back in my routine. And that's the whole thing about a vacation is when you take it is that you pull yourself out of the routine, hopefully so you can get some, you know, peace of mind and peace and quiet and relaxation. But, mm-hmm. you know, when it's over, like all things that are good, you kind of lament and weep and kind of like, I got to go back to work.
But your perspective changes when you're away from something. It's like, it's like scratching a part of your body over and over and over again, and then you stop scratching it for a week. Suddenly, its scab goes away, and you're like, "Oh, maybe I should not scratch it all the time." Working is like scratching. You should work all the time, or you'll scab over in your brain.
So basically, I should quit scabbing myself and take a vacation.
Stop picking at your job. Take a vacation.
Stop picking my job. It's either me or the job, Roger.
You okay, Patrick?
Just kind of this whole metaphor has run far, far, far beyond where it needs to inside my head.
But
Roger in his open sore of importance.
But I also attended PAX, which is interesting because I've never attended PAX before. And in many ways, it's like E3, except it's very fan-oriented.
Penny Arcade Expo, for anybody who's not familiar with PAX, it's from the founders of penny-arcade.com, the most awesome gaming cartoon on the planet.
And a pretty fun show. I mean, it's kind of what you expect out of a gaming exposition. There's a lot of guys with video gaming t-shirts and a little wide...
Hold up your Red Ring of Death t-shirt.
Oh, yes. Everyone's seen this. But I think I'm the only one that had this. Everyone else had different shirts. There was a lot of noise behind some new games. There was Halo
Duke
Reach.
Nukem Forever.
Duke Nukem Forever, which is finally coming out after years and years of delays and cancellations. I finally got picked up, or at least getting help from Gearbox for publishing. And Microsoft was showing off Gears of War 3. I didn't actually finish 2 or 1. And Sony had the PlayStation Move in attendance, and people were going around with the giant lollipop stick.
What'd you think of that?
You know what? And from my non-tech editorial perspective. Actually, no, it probably is. Is that everyone basically said it's a ripoff of the Wii Remote, and when you see the games that they've introduced with it, it does feel like it. But then again, the Kinect, Microsoft had Kinect there too, and you essentially had the same Wii-style games. So you had like a bowling, you know, shake your body around and hit balls flying at you. The Kinect seems cooler because it's a different form. It's you're not holding anything. You're just dancing around in front of it. In fact, one of the game demos they had was a side scroll. You know those beat 'em ups you used to play at, like, you know, the college arcade room and dump like $5 worth of quarters to finish it. Well, instead of using a controller and buttons on the arcade, you would basically use your body. So you punch like this off screen, and they basically had these people standing in front of a white screen, and the Kinect would translate their body movements into their little on-screen avatar, and it would just like do all the motions. So if you had to jump like a flaming barrel or like an oil can, you jump in real life and you jump over it. So it's kind of cool. It was pretty neat. I was quite surprised at the number of not businesses, but publishers that were actually there in attendance. Alienware.
PAX has become a big deal.
It is. And it's,
well,
it's,
E3 it's, sort of allowed an opening a few years back because they've always been industry only, not fan oriented. Right. And then they went to not even having a show floor for a couple of years. And I think that allowed PAX to just steal anybody who had been trying to get into E3. And even with E3 coming back this year to the show floor format, everyone's got the idea of like, you know what, PAX is a lot more fun if I'm not in the industry. Yeah. I think it's a good thing for both sides, honestly.
And PAX, I mean, I think Patrick would agree, is a great way to get in tune with your audience and your evangelist. The people are going to say, hey, you really need to check out this game. I just saw it at PAX. I had a great time. You should, you know, rent it or download the demo or something. You know, you basically get the influence, you know.
Rather than trying to influence the brand influencers who cover games for a living, you get right down there in the biomass and talk to your users.
And, you know, PAX is split into two. I mean, there's PAX East, which started, I think, this year, and then PAX Prime, which is the one I went up to in Seattle.
PAX Prime.
Now, you went to Dragon Con last year, so I want to get you to compare those two in a second, but we have to thank our sponsors first. Did you read any books while you were on your vacation?
Yes, I wrote a book. I read a book by Yahtzee, the guy who does the game, really funny, acerbic, not actually acerbic, really satiric game review videos that are shown on, what's that one that Russ works on?
The Escapist?
The Escapist. If you watch it, it's oh, sorry, zero punctuation. If you watch it, he wrote a little fantasy novel.
Print, ebook, or audiobook?
It was print. It was a little paperbound. Okay.
Well, our show today is brought to you in part by Audible.com. As you know, they're the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, New York Times bestsellers, periodicals. Scientific American is on audiobook. You might not realize that. And you can get a free audiobook just for listening to this show. All you got to do is head over to audiblepodcast.com/east and plug in a book. I am reading the Joe Abercrombie series, The First Law. And if you're a fan of George R. R. Martin, I have a feeling you're going to like it. The Blade itself is the first volume of the First Law trilogy. Book one is The Blade itself. Mm. You can check that out. It's narrated by Stephen Pacey. So that could be one free book. Or you might just want to get an issue of Scientific American. I don't know. I'm also thinking of grabbing Stephen King's The Dark Tower off of Audible pretty soon. But any way you do it, you can get one for free, audiblepodcast.com/east. Now, Roger, Dragon Con, East Coast, exactly the same weekend as Penny Arcade Expo, West Coast. Feud? Should there be a feud? Or are these two different things?
They're definitely different audiences for both. I really like Dragon Con, but unfortunately because of the hotel situation, I couldn't attend. But, I mean, there might be some crossover with people with mutual interests in both. But I think Dragon Con definitely caters to more of the fantasy sci-fi enthusiast fan who's, you know, not you know, very interested in... I mean, because didn't Dragon Con start off as basically sci-fi fantasy... a novel-based fan convention.
Yeah, it seems like that's what its roots are in, because a lot of the panels are around writing and fiction and book-oriented series, although they have a lot of TV-oriented stuff now, too, and movie stuff.
But, you know, it's, you know, people always assume that nerds and geeks are all the same and they like the same things, and that's totally not true. I mean, you know, back at GameSpot, they used to make fun of all the people who used to dress up. It's like, you know what? Those are the hardcore fans. Those are the people you want to attract.
Those are the people you want to court. You want people that are absolutely, utterly, totally dedicated to your brand.
Because those are the people that are most likely to evangelize, most likely to speak highly of your product. And, you know, you have both of those, but, you know, there's definitely a different mindset. You know, people who are into gaming live a different lifestyle or have a different lifestyle than, I say, a super fan of sci-fi or anime or even comic books. Because, you know, yeah, some people may have mutual interests, but some people who take it all the way are like, you know, I was sitting in a room and people were passing out basically, you know, rare bits of knowledge of video gamedom back all the way to like 1984.
See, are you saying that otaku of different subjects have vastly different personalities and lifestyles? Because I don't think I buy that. Because if you're on the outside of like a gaming otaku or a, you know, comic book otaku, it's still lots of intense debate about obscure subjects that don't matter to most people.
It is, but you could say that for I mean, sports fans.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. So, you know, fandom might be similar in that respect, but in the actual display, I think, is a little different. what peak gamers will do on a Friday night might be different than what like,
you know, a small percentage of football fans strip themselves naked from the waist up and paint themselves in colors. Is that really that different from somebody dressing up in their homemade cheetah costume because their favorite game is like Cheetah Square?
You know, if someone spent an entire year making the cheetah costume.
Do you get a lot of cosplayers at PAX?
No, I was actually quite surprised because everyone kept talking. It's like, yeah, people dress up. It's like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. Not even close to the percentage you would see like at something small like WonderCon. Because that's not what those people do. They sit around and play video games. They play board games. They play Catan. They play, you know, I used to play Axis and Allies. They play D&D. They play a lot of games that usually require you to be, you know, motionless and very very intent on your character sheet as well as the dice roll. Or perhaps a controller in the very right.
Well, now, there's one area of overlap. In fact, Mike EATL in the chat room is claiming that Dragon Con started as a D&D gaming con, which would make sense. And there's definitely a board and RPG aspect of PAX that has nothing to do with video games, right?
That is true. I mean, there was a couple of tournaments on tabletop games, and tabletop games is something that is encouraged at PAX. They have people showing. In fact, you know, Catan is one of, for people who don't realize, pretty much all the board games or tabletop games that have recently come out in the U.S. are developed in Germany because I guess they're super fanatics. But Catan is one that has become very popular, and it came out not only as the original card game, but also as the game on Xbox Live. And Microsoft, I'm not sure if they are working in conjunction with these people, but they were essentially, you saw all these surface computing machines that had Catan and people were playing on it. So you had a surface machine and a computing machine, and you know, people had their cards laid out and they had the little, you know, had everything that you would have in the board game, except it was on a computer screen.
Interesting.
But it's kind of cool because one of the pain in the rears of setting up any tabletop game is you got to clear space, and the games usually take, you know, 2 minimum hours. And you know, when you're done, you're never really done because you still have to play the rest of it. So you don't want to get rid of anything, and you got to move everything because you got to put the, you know, dinnerware and all that stuff back on the table.
Can you can you buy dice? Do they have like a vendor area like they do at Dragon Con?
Exhibitors Hall, yes. There were people selling stuff. Not in the same way, but you definitely could buy things.
What kind of stuff? Because yeah, Dragon Con, I've only been there 2 years, the past 2 years, but it's mostly your T-shirts, comics, some cosplay type stuff like you know, outfits, costumes, the contacts that change your eyes, a lot of books, a lot of authors will have vending there. There's some tabletop gaming vendors there, and then toys. That seems to kind of generally be what you see at Dragon Con. Is that similar at PAX?
There are fewer vendors selling stuff, but there are, and they typically do. There was one that was basically doing a vintage video game, so
vintage, that's cool.
So NES, Sega Genesis. Someone was selling a Sega Saturn, and they had, and you know. So I didn't realize this, but there's actually a group of people who are super hardcore collectors who only want Min and Box, like, original packaged games.
Yeah.
And people were selling those. People were selling the funny, ironic video game T-shirts. That show was fun.
Of course.
Of course, you know, people were selling dice and tabletop games as well. So, like, if there was actually a couple that weren't available in stores yet that they were selling there first. So you could buy them, like, the box and just take it home.
Interesting.
If you have a website that you would like to compare your favorites of Dragon Con and perhaps PAX, you might want to find a domain name for it. And that's the other sponsor for East Meets West today, hover.com. It's all about making domain name registration simple. You go to the site, you register a domain, and it doesn't take 50 clicks to buy one. You just get your domain name. It was previously called Domain Direct. Now it's called Hover, H-O-V-E-R. They've sold domains since 1997, and they have a complete help resource area of the website. So not only do they want to make it simple, they want to make it easy to redirect your domain name to where you need it to go. You can manage, forward, transfer your domains and email. They have videos to show you how to do it. And if you call Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., you're not going to get put on hold. You're not going to have to punch through a phone tree. You call, you get a live person. You don't get put on hold. So check them out, hover.com. And in fact, if you use the offer code EAST, you get 10% off your domain name. So go to East HOVER.com, and we thank them for their support of East Meets West. I went to Dragon Con, and I missed you, Roger.
Oh, you missed my sarcastic wit, or
I missed your sarcastic wit. I also missed your depth of cosplay knowledge. Because
ass isn't real. That's just Patty.
That's not, well, there's that, but also the fact, like, oh well, her ass in the anime is what she's depicting, whereas in the manga it would look more. I mean, you have a really good memory for that stuff. And I was wandering around and going, hey, what's that? What's that person? And nobody knew. I was like, you know
Veronica?
What? If Rog,
oh, actually, I don't know.
Veronica would know stuff. Brian Brushwood would know stuff. Justin Robert Young would. We covered 90%, but there was always that one costume that I'm like, I bet Roger would know what that is.
The best thing about hanging out with Roger is, like, if you see a shape in the sky, he'll be like, oh, that's an insert name of obscure brand of airplane here, and it's like Vision H, and you can tell that because of the extra something on the something. Like arguing like weaponry, or like, oh, they would have been using this type of bazooka.
No, that's wrong. That's all, you know.
But it also, I mean, you're pretty feral otaku, yeah. And anything you pay attention to, you tend
to. I think most people
everything.
Are. Most people won't actually cop to it. I've seen people who. Is there such a thing? I guess you would call them foodies, right? A food otaku.
Right.
Because we were sitting at dinner and we were having these hors d'oeuvres and we're like, hey, this tastes really good. It was like it's almost like a cracker with a special. Topping
on it.
And she basically, my friend, she basically ate into it, and she could she literally listed out every ingredient that was in it. Mm-hmm. Well, there's oregano, there's this, that. It's like, holy, how do you know? My taste buds taste like yummy, and that's about it. And I'm always amazed at Mauricio over back at Revision 3 with his, well, at least from my point of view, a very broad depth of knowledge about various brewing methodologies for beer. And I think a lot of people have that, you know, that one topic or that one area that they're just super, super in tune with, whether it's cars, sports, farming, baling wire, sports.
Baling wire otakus?
You know,
there are barbed wire otakus.
Yes, there is a convention to.
Different. Barbed wire and baling wire, two different things.
Yes. Well, yes. It's a wired convention.
I've seen barbed wire collections. I've never seen a baling wire collection.
I haven't seen a baling wire collection that wasn't meant to be used to bale something. Put it that
that's
way.
Just, that's just a bunch of rolls of baling.
Yeah, exactly.
To drive into town.
It's not so much a collection. It's just that's where we keep the wire. Yeah.
I mean, like when Patrick goes to see. I mean, when you go to SEMA, you're like you're familiar with many of the products and what they, you know, the vendors and what they're doing.
Yeah. No, I'm not arguing. Plus, it's also seen as a lot of shiny cars, which is always cool.
But it was fun, and it's always interesting to see how people take to something. Where, you know, when you have a certain level of enthusiasm, mm-hmm. where you just spend all year making a costume, or you spend all year, you know, getting your friends together so you can meet at PAX and play like this one epic game of you know, whatever.
Risk,
I guess, one epic game of Risk or Fortress America, Axis and Allies. It's like, oh, there's a bajillion of them. But it's always neat to see. I mean, you see it with musicians. You know, you have those. You know, when they get to a specific venue, or you get into a topic about various. Like, I didn't realize that Katie Hayes, a fellow coworker of Patrick and ours, is a super jazz. She knows because I was sitting, we were sitting in the grill and we were eating because she was there for PAX. And I was like, why is there so much jazz motif around the city of Seattle? And she said, well, that's because blah, 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 the history. And she's literally giving me, you know, a chronological breakdown of how everything, you know, jazz related to Seattle worked out. And it's like, that's amazing.
She's a jazz geek.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which goes back to my earlier argument, which geeks are geeks. They just tend to geek out in different areas.
Yes, but I don't think she sits, you know, with a group of friends on a Friday night, you know.
Listening to jazz?
Yes.
Actually, she goes to see bands.
She does, but she did, that's what I'm saying. She's not, like, singing at home, like.
Does she go to a jazz fest, perhaps?
She goes to a lot of music fests.
She probably sits at home and listens to jazz.
Yeah, you're basically saying, like, you know, so some nerds are better than others because
nerd activities
require them to leave the house and be social.
Maybe.
You could be a jazz fanatic and never leave your house.
That's true. Yes.
And believe me, I've known some, especially in Austin.
Yes.
It's but isn't Austin just one giant frat house anyway?
What?
A
frat house?
No, a house.
Austin is one. Wait, that's even that even makes less sense. A giant house?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Tom.
Keep Austin weird. Let it go, Roger. Next subject.
I wanted to ask Roger something about, or a remark on something, get Roger's thoughts on cosplay, the people who dress up. One thing, as we were going through for the Twit coverage and talking to all these different people that I hadn't realized from walking around at Comic-Con or Dragon-Con previously, is the backstory element of your costume. So it's not just I'm dressing up as a stormtrooper. It's not just I'm dressing up as an old Republic stormtrooper. It's I'm dressing up as a stormtrooper from this particular story with this particular slant on it. Yeah. And we talked to these this couple who were dressed up, and they had taken cooling fans off of that were meant for motherboards, right? And hooked them up inside the helmets to keep them cool.
Those things are hot.
And they had both come up with different ways of activating them. So he had put his switch up at the top, so when he put the helmet on, he could just kind of click it with his head if he wanted and turn it on. She kept hers on the side so she could turn it on and off as she wanted easily, just by, you know, putting a hand up in the side. So the two things that impressed me was, like, they both knew exactly what part of the story they were from. It wasn't just a series, right? It was specific, and people get detailed about what character they're going to be. Not just like, oh, I'm Chewbacca, but I'm Chewbacca from this episode and this part of this story. And then they get really handy, as you would expect, at making stuff for the costumes that work really well. It's ingenious. It's almost like a little maker fair going on surface.
I mean, you know, one of the things, you know, as more and more people started dressing up and going to the conventions, people wanted to differentiate themselves. And as they did that, they also wanted to maintain the authenticity that they were connected to the material somehow. And that, you know, manifests itself in having a very deep knowledge of a particular character or a specific series of events. I mean, one of the things I saw last year at Dragon Con was, you know, everyone's done the stormtrooper thing, and it's like, oh, it's old hat, so let's branch out. People started doing biker scouts, snowtroopers, and then people started mixing memes. Like, you had the stormtroopers with the Scottish kilts, like the Highlanders, like Scottish Highlanders. And, you know, it's actually cool because now you see essentially various ideas getting bounced around. People do. There's that one guy who dresses up like Elvis Stormtrooper. It goes around with the Stormtrooper armor with the collar and cape. No helmet, but he has the Elvis bouffant and glasses.
So I have to search for Elvis Stormtrooper now.
And people really get serious because that's almost in the same way in the car show where people, you know, work on their car. They add bits of chrome. They do certain customizations. It's kind of a way to kind of showcase your skills, your abilities to other people who are like-minded. It's like, hey, I got this. It got it to work. I got it to do this. And then you show it off to someone else like, hey, that's cool. Mine can do this. And you really have this amazing, community that, you know, gets really enthusiastic. Hopefully not too enthusiastic where they lose all concept of reality. But, you know, I'm always impressed every year, even at Comic-Con. I'm always impressed at the people who go to the lengths they do to recreate something like, oh, this is the Iron Man costume, but this is the one from the movie, or this is the one from the cartoon.
Well, I was thinking like I never think of Iron Man cosplay, and it's not that I've seen that many, but I always think of like pre-movie yellow and red, post-movie gold and red.
Yeah. And I mean, people used to do it with Transformers. Like, you know, not only was it just to have a costume look like the Transformers, you know, people started building this so they could actually transform in the costume. So it looked like when they, you know, as soon as they, you know, changed form, it would look like a car or a truck or something. And it was like, that's really cool because you spent way too much time, you know, figuring out how all those pieces work.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the stereotype of these are folks who got beat up as kids or these are
true. I've met a few like former like college football. I mean, they weren't like, you know, pro track, but you know, they played on college sports teams and they were very athletic. Still very athletic. In fact, you know, if you look at them, they're well chiseled.
Anybody who dressed up as the Spartans had to be athletic. I'll give you that.
They even, you know, there's a whole routine that they have to go through, too. In fact, that was one of the, a few years ago, that was the next step, was not merely just making the costume and dressing. It was physically getting into shape so you look like, you know.
One of the Spartans.
Yes. You know, they you know, not maybe not as bulky with the protein shakes, but they definitely are, you know, they definitely are in shape. And it's not like, hey, look, it's, you know.
Nobody wants to see the fat guy in the Spartan.
No
outfit.
One, no, you know, everyone thinks it's like the comic book guy from The Simpsons, you know, in an outfit that's too small for their shape. In fact, we got one right here. You know, these guys obviously work out. I mean, you know, unless there's some amazing surgery that lets you look like that within a month.
Patrick Norton, thanks for hanging around for East Meets West.
Glad I could be a part of it.
What is so funny? We're just wrapping up the show. Was there was some unintended implication there?
No. We were just looking at the half-naked men.
An uncomfortable moment. We all started laughing.
And then to a nod to the last show, I actually moved my jury duty date to next year.
Yeah, we had two people who posted on subbrilliant.com/EMW that they happened to be going to jury duty that very week. So they were listening to East Meets West while contemplating jury duty.
That's so meta.
One of them actually posted back that he didn't get called. So we're still waiting on the other one. But he may not be able to say if he got picked for a trial.
Well, for my county. Yeah. The city and county of San Francisco, since it is its own county.
Patrick, let folks know where they can find your show that Roger produces.
Why, that would be at techzilla.com or hdnation.tv. Techzilla, the lovely technology program I host weekly with Veronica Belmont. HD Nation, all the best in home theater and high-definition content at hdnation.tv.
What's your Twitter?
Robert Heron, at Patrick Norton.
It is as it sounds, at Patrick Norton.
Patrick, thanks for hanging around. It was great having you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
Don't forget, go ahead.
I was going to say I'm going to bounce because tomorrow morning is Seamus' first day at the new preschool. So it's very
exciting. Take your camera.
Yeah, keep us updated on Twitter.
I'm going to get pictures of me weeping.
Oh, no, my child's so big.
So Brilliant.
I'll catch you later.
Yeah, no problem. SoBrilliant.com/EMW is our website where you can make comments about every episode and find all the episodes we've done. Thanks for watching or listening, everybody. Thanks to Jammer B for producing. Thanks for Leo for letting us be on the network. And Roger, thank you.
Thank you for driving. Oh, wait. Wait, you're at home and I'm here.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks. That's awesome, Jeff.
Bye.
Bye.